Our next speakers are Robin Cantlemore. She's from the RIDBC Renwick Center for Research and Professional Education, the Royal Institute for Deaf and Blind Children, University of Newcastle, Australia. And with her also is Christy Yoshinaga-Tano, professor, the Department of Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences right here in the University of Colorado at Boulder. Please welcome our duo, Robbie and Christy.
Well, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been talking to Christy about Lena for the last 2 and a bit years, and it's just very exhilarating to be in a room with other people who are talking about Lena too. We're going to present something that's probably quite different tack to everybody else that's been speaking today, but we are tying together a few themes. This morning, nourishment was mentioned. I actually use the word auditory diet when I'm talking to my parents and to my colleagues that I'm training, rather than auditory environment, because we're talking about children who have hearing impairment and degraded access to that auditory environment. So I speak about nourishing their auditory diet, so you hear me use that word, and it was used this morning. Someone else also spoke about the fact that we need to think about the background noise that is involved for children who have degraded hearing access, and we'll be speaking about that too. And there were also some questions about whether singing had different representations on Lena, and we've got a very good example of that for you. So, the opportunity for RIDBC Renwick Centre to use Lena as a clinical research tool came about when Christy came down as our visiting academic fellow in 2009, February to June. And Christy brought with her a prototype of the Lena Pro and the research software at that time. And so we had the opportunity, we were talking about it, and she said, why don't we try this on? Now, we're calling this child Tom. If we accidentally call him by his real name, please erase that from your memory, because this family is very well known in deaf culture in Australia. Okay, so Tom, who was already in a research program with me, and see what we get. And I thought, what a great idea. So this is actually the first longitudinal study that Lena was ever used in on a child with impaired hearing. And that study's now halfway through. I've got a 5-year program running, so it finishes in December 2012. So this is the subject and family. Tom is presently 3.5 years old. So the data we have to date is 15 to 36 months of age, over 13 days of 140 plus hours, of weekend home, home and daycare, and home and preschool examples. The child's hearing status is that he has a moderate severe bilateral sensory neural loss with a PTA, a better tone average, of 65 decibels in his better ear, and so he wears bilateral hearing aids. His parents' hearing status is considerably compromised also. They both wear bilateral hearing aids for profound bilateral sensory neural losses, with one parent having a PTA of 100 dB in the better ear, and the other parent having a PTA of 93 dB in the better ear. So Tom is one of several children taking part in a much larger research project that I have on the boil, examining preliminary audition, speech and spoken language development in infants with cochlear implants, hearing aids or normal hearing, but they are all growing up in deaf family environments. So I actually have the very first infant cochlear implantee of a deaf family in this program as well. Some of these children are perfectly normally hearing, and we call those coders, but they are hearing deaf speech, okay? Tom wears bilateral hearing aids for a moderate severe loss, as I said, and his parents are steadfast members of the Australian deaf community, which is why you must forget his name if I say it wrong. They are fluently bilingual at home. They use Auslan Sign Language and spoken language interchangeably, depending on the opportunity and context. But you need to remember that the spoken language context within his home is parents who have compromised access to speech themselves. Okay, so prior to using Lena, we had already started to track his vocal and auditory development. And we used the IMP, which is a device that I use, to measure and document and evaluate his vocal development under 12 months of age. And this is the IMP scoring graphic for Tom, which shows that his dynamic vocal progress, specifically his move from innate vocal reflexive, you might say, vocal phonation, to active use of his robust audition production loop, happened, as it typically does in hearing children, between the ages of 6 and 8 months of age. And that carried on to show that his acuity of hearing was actually guiding his vocal productions to progressively imitate the acoustic features of the spoken language that he heard in his environment. You saw him when he was 15 months of age, and?
And he was very, very auditory and very, very vocal for a 15-month-old. For any 15-month-old, actually, not just a 15-month-old who was deaf.
And that's what we would have predicted by this result on the IMP, because at 12 months of age, with 9 months of hearing experience with AIDS, his verbal productions already incorporated all the suprasegmental features and phoneme variety that was typical of early speech behaviour in someone who was not yet 12 months of age. He had spontaneous use of performative sounds in play, such as ow, wow, 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 when he was turning something around, round, round, round. He used variegated babble when he was self-talking, so if he was pretending to do something, dab, dab, lab, dab, 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 stuff going on, okay? He used reliable proto-words or naming sounds for several things like mama, dada, up, up, if he was wanting to be picked up, and he did that with conversational partners who were not necessarily familiar with him. So Lena presented us with the opportunity to examine his auditory diet. What was nurturing this deaf toddler's preliminary progress towards spoken language? So what I was interested in, and what Christy said, let's see what we can find, was what was the extent of his auditory experience? What was shaping his perception and nascent production of English as a spoken language? So at 15 months of age, using the Lena that Christy had brought with her, we took 3 days of analysis, which gave us 32 and a half hours, and we looked at his contemporary auditory diet. And we found that it did not contain the heightened opportunity and expanded model of spoken language that, as educators of the deaf, we would generally consider necessary to promote verbal development that was age appropriate in the child. Only 15% of his day was meaningful speech, and the word count, although in the 53rd percentile, which was average, was not sufficient in our educated opinion for a child who is hearing impaired to come to speech, correct?
Yeah.
Christy, you said that you'd like to see it around the levels of?
Well, when we look at the deaf population that we're recording, we actually don't know whether the norm for typically developing children, the amount of words, like the 12,000 average words per day, actually is enough for a deaf child to come to intelligible, age-appropriate spoken language. In our program, of all the children that we've been running so far, the range is very, very high, ranging from somewhere around 17 to 20. Well, we actually had somebody at 43,000 words a month.
That's called verbal diarrhea.
Yeah, but it's exceptionally high, probably due to the intervention, but we have to collect a lot more data to see what happens if we have many mothers who are just at the 12,000, 15% range.
But what was interesting here was he had 50%, you know, he was at 50% for auditory input, but he also had as much, if not more, sign language input. So we're not talking about language loss here. We're talking about the fact that he didn't have a great amount of spoken language that we would associate with spoken language development in a child with hearing aid.
Plus, actually, the sign language is even more enriched because he was really bilingually fluent in two different sign language systems. He was fluent in American sign language and also in Australian sign language. And
fluent for aid.
And he signed weekly with his grandparents in American sign language on Skype.
Yes. Yeah. And you'll hear him in a little while. Anyway, but what was interesting was, as other people have mentioned, he actually frequently rehearsed the use of his audition production loop himself. He used his own vocalizations a lot, so his CV count was 79% at this point in time. And he also had fantastic, really solid, pragmatic vocal turn-taking skills. So if he was working or talking with someone in spoken English, he had really high return on that spoken language input. But he did the same in sign as well, I have to say. So what surprised us was, when we looked at this, the AVA score came up as a possible language delay. And Christy and I looked at each other and said, well, it's not language delay, is it? Because he's obviously not language delayed. So we're going to say possible spoken language delay, okay?
And actually for him, it's maybe even not language, maybe it's actually vocalization delay.
Vocalization
production.
Articulation. Articulation. Anyway, we'll go there. We'll go there. The data that we collected after... Oh, my God. You're kidding. Oh, jeez. Sorry. I'll just fly through this. The data that we collected after this first set represents 10 typical weekdays and 3 typical weekend days, and it crosses 22 months of early child development. So the longitudinal analysis that we looked at shows relative consistency in pattern of his auditory diet over that period. He had an average count of around 12,000 words a day, which was typical for Norm. He had an average daily opportunity of 600 conversational turns. He was producing between 2,500 and 2,800 words, or vocal phones rather, a day. So this was quite, you know, fairly consistent, except in December, which was when family came to visit, or he went to visit family, and all his relatives are hearing, okay? So it made sense, more adults, more input, more vocal, you know, sort of enrichment. Sorry, I'm trying to get through it. But when we broke it down and looked at the impact of the different environments, that was not the case. It wasn't that there were more adults around. It was actually the environment that he was in that gave him more opportunity. So we started to realise that it was the changing experience that was giving him enrichment rather than the people who were present. So daycare, unfortunately, was nada, daycare. And so that gave us an opportunity to talk to the parents about enriching his auditory diet at least 2 days a week, because that was under the norms. The strategies that had been shared with them in early intervention obviously were having some kind of effect, and it wasn't on the days that the parents had visited, although that did come on one of those days, the grandparents were here, but that didn't explain why the other therapy day was high. So it was something about what was going on in therapy. And the parents had been using those opportunities because preschool was showing similar effects where his current preschool was now. And interestingly, after that first intervention with Lena early in March 2009, the parents took on board that they needed to be speaking to him more too. And so you can see that in the weekend days of 2010, they brought their adult word count, and indeed the concomitant turn-taking and everything came up as well. So what are some of the components of his auditory experience? Lena's let us look at those things. What are the points that are nourishing his spoken language growth and his vocal confidence? Well, it's imitation and initiation of vocabulary at preschool, and it's also his independent rehearsal of some of the meaningful phrases that he is gaining at home. So we used ADEX then to actually look at and sort through for instances where there were high adult word count and conversational turn-taking, and we were looking for what were some of those precepts. Now, I'm not going to show them all to you because I won't get this finished. I'll go to the next bit. We also looked at instances where there was high vocal count from the child and length of utterance, because we wanted to know what was it, the condition and the circumstance, that encouraged him to lengthen those utterances. And this is what we found. If I can make it activate. This is him at 29 months of age.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. 5.
So he was rehearsing himself at home, and did you hear the pitching that he was half singing? Well, this wasn't the first time that we'd actually heard him sing, and that's why I made that comment before, and Christy can talk about this, because we were sitting there together with our jaws on the floor.
Why don't you play it?
Play it first? All right. So, oh, yeah, right. So we're going...
Well, we were listening, yeah, to his transcript, and we kept hearing this singing. These long vowels, it went on and on, and then actually we realized after we were listening to various segments all throughout the day, and they were all very similar. So then we realized he's singing the same song.
And then we asked, we were talking to Mum, and oh no, the confusing factor was on ADEX, it came up as two vocal counts. And we're going, we must be looking at the wrong part of the ADEX. You know, this is, oh geez. Anyway, so we said to Mum, we found this, and she said, oh yeah, that's the Patsy Cline Chains song. Listen to this. Listen to this. Where, oh, he's 15 months old.
It turned out somebody had given the mom.
And he's singing in B major.
But apparently he only likes the song because the mom was giving this gift as a CD. She played. She didn't listen to it. She's deaf. But he likes it when they're in the car.
And he's sitting in the back seat of the car listening to this.
Song.
And he goes, ha, oh, ha. Oh. And then he hears, dunk-a-dunk, dunk-a-dunk, and he goes, ooh. But at 15 months. Now, what was important about this was, it wasn't about the count of vocal turns, but what Christy and I suddenly realised was that the characteristics of this piece of information proved to us this was an auditory learner. This was a child with real capability to come to spoken language. Do I keep going or do I just stop? Keep going? All right. So, yeah, so we were looking then at why were we getting different information? And basically, his standard scores were suggesting he was basically, you know, doing what we would expect and all the rest of it. I'm going to jump. There's too much here. There's too much here. I'll just go through. All right, different interactives? No? Go, yeah, do the, all right. So, we looked at different environments, but we also looked at different interactors, okay? And there were certain things that told us why this child was doing certain things at different times. Now I'm going to jump ahead and tell you, this child is already starting to code shift. Code shift means that you match with your conversational partner, okay? So when he is speaking with his parents, I'll play you an example. 10 minutes later the same day, he's speaking on the phone with his grandmother, and she's a hearing person. So here he is speaking to his father, and he's 36 months of age, so this is last December.
Okay, Pebble. Daddy. What's Daddy Pebble? Daddy Pebble.
Daddy what?
Daddy Pebble.
Dad can't lip read, they're too far away. Okay, so the entire topic is lost here. This child is trying to ask a question about something. Dad can't lip read him, he doesn't know what he's speaking about, so Dad makes next best guess. He's playing with a bike. I'll tell him about the bike. Mum says, I'm cooking. This is the beginning of this child's language slowdown, because now he can't keep a topic exchange going with his parents anymore. He can speak almost as well as they can when he has a spoken language partner, but he cannot keep the dance, which is exactly what you spoke about, he cannot keep the dance of interaction going with his parents anymore unless they're facing him and can speech read him at the lips. And you try and speech read a three-year-old, you know, it's not funny. So this is what he can do on the phone, for heaven's sake, with his grandmother, and I can't find it's gone. Where's the...
There. How are you?
How are you?
Grandma?
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you?
Are you
a good boy?
Yeah.
Are you
Okay, Grandma picks up.
No crying, no. Happy?
He was saying, no crying. Now that's 10 minutes difference to the last comment. So the interaction there is entirely different. He's now following a sequence of topics across a phone line with someone he can't even see, and he's 36 months old and has a severe loss.
So one of the things that we've discovered about Lena is designed to look at the quality of the child's localizations, but in a lot of the cases where we're at work, we have compromised an adult model and we don't actually have any. We can listen to it, but we don't have any way of coding that.
So this is what we were talking about last night. What has AVA analysis told us? Well, it's told us that Tom does have age-appropriate phoneme diversity, but when we do formal analysis of it, he doesn't use it in his everyday speech unless he is led to it, okay, by a speaking partner who prompts him.
So one of the things about AVA is if we listen to a lot of the vocalizations, what the computer characterized as a good enough approximation acoustically to get him to age-appropriate score, the human ear actually doesn't accept as being appropriate. But he must have enough of the acoustic features of the phoneme that says to us that he, with time, he's going to get that phoneme and he's going to get to intelligibility. But when you actually, the human ear actually listens to what the computer has coded as an age-appropriate vocalization, it actually is sometimes not true.
So when you look at the Lena months, at 38 months, and a standard score of 106, and an MLU, or an estimated, which I wouldn't call MLU because it's not really language, 2.86, all the rest of the formal testing shows him at least 10 months behind that. Whoops, between 8 months.
Well,
10 months
so
behind,
you
so.
See spontaneously with the different types produced in a spontaneous speech sample, he only has 13 consonants. That's not enough for him to have intelligible speech. So he really has to develop quite a few more. But the AVA must be picking up that he's moving
in that direction.
To the accurate production of a lot more consonants than we would actually give him.
So it's telling us that perhaps he's producing these phonemes at times when we can't get it in formal analysis, right? And they're differentiated enough in their acoustic envelope that Lena picks it, but we don't hear them because they're not mastered. The other thing is, perhaps that is then predictive and suggests that Tom is on his way to intelligible speech, because we know, having heard him sing at 15 months, that he's an auditory learner. He has very good listening skills. Okay.
So although on this case and on many others, actually, we found a discrepancy between our actual coding and our speech assessments and the AVA score, one of the things that is pretty comprehensive over all of our deaf children is that they appear to be, if they're early identified, early amplified, they get good therapy, they're following normal development.
Yes.
And what's exciting to me, actually, is that I have several cases of known secondary disorders, speech disorders, with deafness, and AVA is flagging those children. So I'm actually quite optimistically.
This is the end. So the supposition in this particular longitudinal case, this is the end, is this. That the adult word count is sufficient but could be better, and the parents have made changes now in his preschool arrangements so that he will be at preschool 5 days a week and daycare's gone out the window, so that's great. But it's compromised by the speech model, so it doesn't level up at the bottom. The conversational turn takings, he's got all that. Mum and Dad do that very, very well in speech, okay? So that would have been normal, but it's compromised by this not as high parent model of language at the bottom, so it's already tipping. The topic maintenance, which he can do, is being tipped by his parents not being able to do it. So his degraded hearing, with their degraded hearing and perception of speech and production of speech, is actually tipping him away from the spoken language model that he's capable of. And that's basically it. Thank you.
Okay.